The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show in which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce you to our panel for today. It's Professor Jim Tubbs, coming back from your tour of the South Pacific.
Well, my tour of Arizona and then Hawaii, yes. But then it's been like 3 weeks since I've seen you guys, since I got back. So
it's the same amount of time, Jim, since we've seen each other. So you're good.
I think that would have to be the case. I'm pretty sure it's a transitive, it's a reflexive relation.
It is. Yeah. It is. Absolutely. We're glad to have you, Jim. Tell us the most important thing about the one place you found with the discounted Mai Tais.
Most important thing. Well, it's in an area with perfect weather, and it's got huge, like, ports in the side of it, bigger than windows, that they can slide open. So it's like an open, it's a covered open air bar where you can watch ball games and have fish tacos, and it's a very nice place. But Kailua Kona in general is a very nice place.
That sounds awesome. Jim, you already mentioned how before the trip was even over, the agreement was made, right? Returning next year.
Oh, yeah. We've got reservations for next year.
That's so awesome.
Both in Arizona and Hawaii.
Very cool. Very cool.
I still question your sanity on catching the return flight. So,
and those, of course, are the dulcet tones of Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Now, what's wrong with Jim's return flight?
He went to Hawaii.
Why'd he come back?
Yeah. Why would you come back?
That's right. The issue is that he returned, right?
Yeah.
I really shouldn't have. It was an overnight flight that was totally packed.
Wow.
There was not an empty seat on the plane.
See? Oh, so did you fly back direct?
No, flew back to L.A. and then had an overlay in L.A. and then flew from there.
Okay.
Like I said, I question your sanity, Jim.
The sanity will be questioned if he doesn't return. So we know that everything is fine at this moment. Professor Heather Hill, of course, is here with us quite stately in her office, doing the best work that a faculty member in the College of Liberal Arts and Education can do.
Appearing on ATP?
Right.
Yes. Followed very closely. By choosing your next boss.
Oh, yeah. So one of the members of the search committee is Hank Durkin.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Friend of this program.
Right.
So I think we should have Hank on.
We should.
Be great.
He actually came in person to be here this week from North Carolina.
Wow.
And he mentioned knowing quite a bit about Jim Tubbs and something about pimento cheese.
Yes, pimento cheese. Well, Palmetto cheese is the brand that he likes, but yes, makes great sandwiches.
Anyway, I think we should get him on.
I don't think I know this person. Has he sent in lots of questions or?
Yeah.
He's an alum.
Oh, okay.
He sat in and watched our show several times.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And wasn't he also at Book Suey too that time?
Yes, he was.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yep.
But he's an alum of the college.
Right.
And he was asked to serve on the search committee, which is kind of an unusual thing, but he's been great.
Yeah. No, when I was on the search committee for Dean that resulted in our getting Marski.
There was one?
Yeah, we had an alum on
the
committee. It was Frank Hill Cullen, whose daughters I all ended up teaching.
Okay. That's right. All right. Maybe it's just a Clay thing. Maybe we
When we did our homecoming recording, when we were out in the tent, Hank was there for that.
Yes, he was.
Oh, that's, yeah, okay. Yeah. I remember him.
You know what it makes me think of? We never really got around to it. I'll take the blame for that. We're on Zoom still. That's a great time to be meeting up with people that we can't usually meet up with. And maybe we can make it a theme for the summer to bring a whole bunch of alums and question writers and things like that on the show. I think it'd be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be cool.
Continuing around the horn, Professor Mara Livesey is here with us today. She has a new haircut since the last time we recorded. A
new haircut since 2 weeks ago.
Yep. It's a big, big deal. You said in your post, no more wedding hair. I thought that was amusing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you snagged your prince and you no longer have to throw it out the window to get him anymore, right?
Right? He doesn't need to climb this anymore.
Yeah, it looks like it's just down to your shoulders now instead of as long as it used to be.
Yeah, it's about half the length it used to be.
What?
This is about more my style.
It's a bold move.
The shower drain thanks you.
Exactly.
The shower drain does thank me.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for that, Mara. Continuing around, Professor Beth Oljar is here.
Hey, and I have a student who's taking the Chem 1030 course from you.
Oh, Mara, great.
And I said, you will love Professor Lipsy.
We got to recruit more students into it or it's not going to run.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Okay.
Cash incentives and car giveaways.
Yeah.
We need to get the word out. Need to get the lead out.
What course is this?
This is Chem 1030. It's Chemistry and Society, How Drugs Work. It's like the science credit for non-majors.
Oh, yeah.
Heather, you'll remember the original title of the course, Let's Do Drugs.
Right.
Which was forbidden by the provost. Yes.
Correct. I told my students that that was the original name of the course and that I wished it had been allowed to remain the name. And they were all on board with that.
Yeah.
They thought that was a great idea.
Mara, when does it meet?
It meets Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1.
1 to 1:50?
1 to 1:50.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Are there drugs being taken at all?
Well, caffeine.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Ibuprofen.
No, it doesn't have to be illegal drugs, but are there
substances
that are explored in the class? Mm-hmm.
There are many substances explored, legal and illicit.
Recreational marijuana. Could you do that in the classroom or would that be shunned upon?
I think since it's illegal federally, we shouldn't bring it onto campus.
That sounds right to me.
That's been the problem with all the research up to now, that it's been illegal to have it. So it's illegal to do research on it.
Right.
And again, let's just be realistic about the fact that I would say on a daily basis in our building, at least one student is probably doing edibles. The thing we want to avoid, right, is smoking something on campus, which is still technically illegal inside the building. So
smoking anything is, yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
So this is one of the weirdest things that's ever happened in the middle of the show. I was just about to introduce Dan Maggio when he disappeared, and it's his birthday today.
Well, his sound went out first, and then his video froze.
It was freezing up, yeah.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get him back, because the questions we're going to do today are dedicated to him by a question writer. So
the birthday boy.
Oh, he's coming back. He's coming back.
There he comes.
He's back.
Yeah.
There he is.
So we'll.
That was you.
I think it was you, there Dan. I'm sorry. Last but not least, Professor Dan Maggio, a.k.a. the birthday guy.
Oh, he froze up again.
Oh, no.
No!
And he has this all-knowing smirk in the window.
Yes, he's frozen in smirk.
Hold on, I gotta screen grab that face. That face is way too. Oh, doggone!
There he is.
I can hear you. Fine. Oh, it must be me. I'm sorry.
You're doing fine, Dan. You're doing fine.
Yeah, it says my internet connection is unstable.
Yeah, Mom says that most times. It's not right now, but it does it a lot.
I'm
sure it's just the internet connection.
No, it's me actually.
Well, I'll tell you what, Dan, we are happy to celebrate with you. We hear you've got some fun stuff planned for tomorrow as well. Yep. Hopefully it's been an enjoyable day. And I don't know if you heard, but we had a listener send in questions, basically, at least indirectly, at you. So we'll see if we can get to these questions today.
Oh, yeah, boy. The rest of us, we're just going to sit back and watch.
Right, right.
Dan, did you get a birthday haircut or shine or whatever?
No, but I actually had a birthday massage today.
Oh, nice.
Because the curling tournament from last weekend has taken its toll on my legs. So I treated myself to a massage today.
That sounds about
fantastic.
Right.
Fantastic.
That sounds about
right. I asked him if he could take a few inches off the top at the same time, but he said he doesn't do hair. So
too bad.
Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. It's been a while since we've had questions regarding haircuts. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways, emailing us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook and Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. These questions were sent by basically, at this point, I would say, one of our longest time question senders, Kimberly Richards of Van Nuys, California. And she basically said, Dan Maggio should get a kick out of these. And that was the only prompt. So I haven't looked at them yet. Let's see what happens.
They're all Tom Cruise questions. I just know it.
I think now that I've seen the first couple questions, there is an element of numeracy, as in counting things involved, but no Calc 3, as far as I can tell. So I think we're in pretty good shape here. Let's start with, what is the most common number of dimples that can be found on a golf ball?
364.
I'll tell you what, I'm giving it to you because apparently it actually varies based on the brand. Had no idea. And the range is 300 to 500. And so as far as I'm concerned, you hit it pretty square on.
That's Kendra-esque of you.
That's very Kendra-esque. The only overriding principle of a golf ball generation is that it has to have a diameter of 1.68 inches. Because I tell you what, let's mix a non-decimal-based measuring system with decimals. That sounds like a great idea.
I wonder what that does to the trajectory of the ball, though, to change the number of dimples on it.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too.
You know, it says something here, Jim. It says, according to Scientific American, where they actually, of course, perform some experiments, a depth change by only 0.001 of an inch can produce radical change in the ball's trajectory.
Yeah, so, I would think so.
Oh, wow.
Do you folks remember that one Mythbusters episode where they did that with a car?
Meaning?
They put dimples on a car and it actually got better gas mileage.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Well, I don't want dimples on my car, so it's got
a few. It's going to look a little weird.
We leave it up to them to do it. Yeah, not my car either. So.
Oh my gosh, hilarious. How many feet did a chicken in flight cover to capture the world record for distance flown? It's like an old riddle, like, do chickens fly? I mean, they're birds, so they fly. They just don't really fly very far. But what's the world record?
28.
We have 28?
I was going to say 24.
I'm going to go a little further. 52.
I'd say 10.
I think I can help you out a little bit. It was in 2014, and the observed flying was 13 continuous seconds. So I'll give you a chance to revise just a little bit.
Oh, wow.
Oh, okay.
That's a lot.
Then I would say 88 feet.
I'd say 100.
Yeah, let's go 125 now.
You know what it says here? That in 13 seconds in 2014, the furthest recorded distance covered by a flying chicken was 301.5 feet.
Super chicken.
Yes.
A length of a football field.
Yep.
Just taking some steroids.
If all birds can fly, why was there such a catastrophe when Les Nessman let all the turkeys off?
Well, now we're talking horizontal flight or vertical or slightly angled.
Right, right.
Top of the Hoover Dam. I mean, what are we talking?
Just down.
I didn't think all birds could fly. I thought they all had wings, but I didn't think they could all fly.
Not all birds.
Maybe I'm wrong.
What about like emus?
Emus, ostriches.
I mean, I feel like even a penguin could get like airborne for 0.1 of a second or something, you know? I mean,
well, so could I.
Mara's a bird.
When you're jumping off the ice floe, right, to go get some fish, I'm sure I've seen happy feet. I know.
There you go. There you go. Professors, speaking of Guinness, who does Guinness list as the most portrayed literary human character from film and TV, with essentially 254 separate representations in the modern era?
Shakespeare?
Ebenezer Scrooge.
Macbeth.
Sherlock Holmes.
These are all really good choices, but it goes to Mara this time. It's Sherlock Holmes. Yes, Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, really? Wow.
There's so many different Sherlock Holmes things.
Yeah. I mean, it's listed here to not forget Muppet Sherlock Holmes. So Kermit the Frog counts. I mean, there's a lot of representations here, you know?
I just bought the whole series with Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, yeah.
Sherlock, because I just adore it.
Absolutely awesome. By the way, bonus points, as far as I'm concerned, for the runner-up, pretty darn close. The runner-up is Hamlet, and so I heard Shakespeare. That's good enough for me. Yeah.
Wait a minute, hold it. So the runner-up is, shouldn't it be Dr. Watson?
I mean, okay.
That's an interesting point.
Major.
I mean, right?
Literary human characters.
Sherlock has been presented a lot without Dr. Watson, though.
Yes.
Major character.
Okay, all right.
Protagonist.
I mean, I suppose you could do Hamlet without Hamlet, but
That would be an interesting play.
You're listening to Ask the Professor from University of Detroit Mercy. We're grateful to those listeners who submitted questions for today's show, and we welcome your questions at atp@udmercy.edu. Now, let's return to our host, Matt Mayo, with more questions for the panel.
These questions were sent by Kimberly Richards of Van Nuys, California. In the modern era, this person has published more than 250 works of fiction, making them essentially the author from the modern era with the most published works. Who is it?
Dean Koontz.
Nope.
James Patterson.
Nope. Let's see. When I say fiction, I definitely mean fiction.
That's not helping me.
That's not helpful.
Science fiction, or are we talking?
This is a long shot. Their okay. bestseller of all 250 of those tomes.
Oh, their bestseller.
Has a picture of an exploding volcano on the cover and is pretty iconic.
What, we're talking like, oh.
L. Ron Hubbard.
L. Ron Hubbard is the answer to the question. Oh. Yes, there we go. And poor Heather needs to take a shower because she feels dirty. Yes.
I think we all do.
I'm with you, Heather.
I was going to say, as do we all.
Yeah.
Oy.
Yeah,
hand sanitizer, please.
According to the Church of Scientology, his written teachings make up an approximately 500,000 additional pages, totaling 65 million total words. Fiction was used for a reason. Let me just leave it at that.
Okay.
He never had an unpublished non-thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. On average, professors, how many gallons of beer does the average adult American consume in 1 year?
Gallons?
Gallons of beer.
10.
Oh, no. I'm thinking
too low?
In the hundreds.
Really? No,
a lot of people don't drink beer.
Yeah. Gallons?
Maybe.
I would say 8.
All over the map, as usual.
Hold on. Okay. Hold on. Dan, let's figure this thing out mathematically.
Well, just how much in a month?
How many pints in a gallon?
Actually, do a week. I figured if average American might drink, say,
a week?
Four bottles week. Or cans of beer.
Four.
So that's 4 times 12, 52. Say 48 52. Ounces. How many ounces are in a gallon?
64?
No, you know what, Dan? You're being too logical. We just prefer to
just guess.
I'm going to go to 8. I'm going to guess 8 gallons.
So it's interesting. I think that you may have been closer to the actual value as you finished your calculation, Dan. It says here that over age 21.
No, it's week. We were doing week. So 26.
So Dan hits it nearly right on the dot. It's 28.2 gallons of booze.
Oh.
Yes. Pretty amazing.
Now, is this an average of people who drink beer or an average of all Americans?
So now we're getting into the nitty gritty.
Because how does it account for people that don't drink any?
Yeah, that's true. So how about this? Can you grab even one of the top 2 states who blow that average out of the water at 45 and 43?
Wisconsin.
No.
Oregon or Washington.
No.
Really?
It's not Wisconsin.
Oktoberfest alone.
Yeah, per capita.
It says here North Dakota and New Hampshire are at the top of the list.
Wow.
Huh. Way at the bottom with only 22 and 20 gallons. Is Connecticut, and not too surprisingly,
Utah.
Utah, yeah.
Yeah, but I agree with Mara. I thought Wisconsin, for all of its breweries, you know, and every third street corner has a bar. I mean,
instead of a Starbucks.
True.
For all we know, Wisconsin's number 3 by like a hair, Dave. So
okay. All right.
Okay. You know, we had this bit of trivia fairly recently, but I just love it. I just love it to death. Which movie holds the record for the highest number of extras in a single camera shot scene?
Gandhi.
It was Gandhi. Yeah. Possibly 300,000 people on set.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
The funeral scene. Yep.
Exactly.
Good movie.
Very, very cool. What occupation is considered the most dangerous job in America? If you think about work-related deaths in 2019.
Mortician.
Touche.
No?
I've got to give it to you. No, but that's not what it says here.
Wait,
but I believe it's deaths that occur on the job, Dave. Not
Oh!
Window washer.
Firefighters. Oh. I'm wrong. It's not firefighters.
It's not firefighters. It's not.
Coal miner? Mm-hmm. What about police officers, though?
It used to be coal miners.
They're not even on the list that we have here because we sort of have a sloping list here. I don't think it will help you, but it was.
Race car drivers?
Getting closer. 1,480 work-related deaths in 2019. You know what it was? It was delivery truck drivers. And I suppose in a way that makes sense.
Really?
I still think my anthropomorphism is valid.
Lots of deaths.
Yeah. Per capita, there's a theme here. For the ones that would rise to the top, fishing, hunting, and logging.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. I can see that.
As dangerous occupant. Well, I knew. Yeah. Logging, of course.
Per capita.
Yeah.
Yep.
I somehow got the feeling stenographers weren't in the top 10. So, I mean,
I thought university professors for sure were going to be somewhere out there. Yeah.
Who would be stupid enough to do that for a living?
Because we're all actually 39, you know, we just look several decades, except for Mara. We all just look several decades older.
I'm just 21 all over again.
Dan, this is going right up Kimberly's, you know, Kimberly sending these questions to you. What's the sum of all the numbers on a roulette wheel? I guess we do have to do some math.
Ooh.
What's the highest number on a roulette wheel?
36.
I thought 32 was the highest.
I think it's 36.
36?
528? Oh, 36?
Oh, no. It's 666, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 666. I remember
there's some twisted. Wait,
there are not 666 numbers on a roulette wheel.
No, the total.
The sum of 0 through 36 is 666.
So, that's 36 times 37 divided by 2.
Huh?
Okay, I believe you.
Math things.
This is pretty interesting, though. Professors, I would guess that you would get 666, but from there it gets quite a bit stranger and even arbitrary. For instance, adding any three numbers that appear horizontally on the wheel can be related to the number 6. For instance, the numbers 28, 29, and 30 appear horizontally towards the end of the table. The total for those three particular numbers added together is 87. If you add those digits together, you get 15. And if you add 1 plus 5, it ends up making 6 again. So there's lots of weird combinations, apparently, that bring you to 6.
So
this sounds like conspiracy theory to me.
Yeah.
Like roulette was designed by Lucifer. Is that actually going?
Or QAnon. Maybe QAnon.
I was about to say these questions sponsored by Q. What are your odds of hitting the smallest jackpot available on a given Vegas slot machine?
Well, wait a minute. All the machines have different payouts.
They're all rigged. So
1 in 500.
1 in a trillion.
No, but for the lowest payout, it'd be what?
1 in a million.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the way you want to think about this is the lowest payout on a slot machine is going to be the most probable odd, right? So,
which is probably like one cherry, you know.
This is pretty incredible.
1 in 10?
Kimberly says, they say in Vegas, the easier the game is to understand, the harder it is to hit, okay?
Okay.
In order to hit the 2,400 coin jackpot in Vegas, which I believe they're saying is the smallest jackpot, your odds are 1 in 262,144. But to hit the megabucks, it's 1 in over 49 million. FYI, your odds of dying in a plane crash are more around 10 million. So it's actually more likely, right?
Expected value is very low.
Yes. Wow. These have been a lot of fun. We've got a few more minutes and a few more questions. What English word has the most definitions at 464 in the Oxford English Dictionary? That seems high.
The word rose?
Mm-mm. Facts.
Indeed.
That was good. That was good.
The.
No, it doesn't say the.
What?
It's not what, but you're getting closer, Heather.
Why?
I don't know.
Who?
When?
Because?
It says the 464 definition word in the OED is set, S-E-T.
Huh. Oh, that makes sense.
Yep.
That run is a distant second with 396. Okay. Followed the top 10 by go, take, stand, get, turn, put, fall, and strike.
Wait a minute. This sounds like a dog academy here. What's going on? I mean,
run, hit, strike. Yes, exactly.
Sounds like something Mara tells a cat every day, right?
Exactly. Run.
Strike.
What is the world record, professors, for the number of people to have flown on a single commercial airplane at once?
525.
So you're actually closer than not, Jim, but it's higher.
Ooh.
680.
It must have been an A380. Let's see.
No, it actually says, just to be clear, it says it's a Boeing 747.
Yeah. Really? Yeah.
Which was over capacity, it says.
Oh, okay.
And no luggage.
Must have been all, it must have been all economy class.
Were they all clowns?
No, 650,
it's then. A Shriner flight.
It's actually, Dan, I mean, I'm glad you went down that route because it's quite a bit more serious. Operation Solomon was a 1991 Israeli military operation in which Jewish Ethiopians were smuggled out of their homeland as the government was beginning to topple. So they tried to fit them all in one aircraft.
Wow.
Okay. So luggage was definitely not,
no,
not a problem. The weight of luggage is not an issue. Okay.
720.
1,000.
Yeah, I'm giving this one to Mara. You're not going to believe me when I tell you this. When they took off, it was 1,086 people on the flight. And when they landed, it was 1,088 as two women had given birth during the flight.
Oh, my gosh.
Good grief.
Wow. So a whole lot of people did not have a seat on that flight.
Yeah.
Or a whole lot of people were seats.
Yes, also possible.
Yeah, probably.
Gives new meaning to standing room only.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Or big spoon, little spoon.
Yes, exactly. Professors, what is the known record number of children born to one woman?
Don't want to know.
26.
It's going to take me a second to steady myself.
Easy.
16 sets of twins, 7 sets of triplets, 4 sets of quadruplets. Only 67 of the 69 children born to this woman survived the first year of infancy.
Oh, my God.
And this was recorded by the Ministry of Medicine in Moscow, circa 1782. 69 children.
I'm highly suspicious.
The time has come, professors, I'm afraid, to say goodbye, Dan.
Goodbye.
Beth.
I'm glad I have cats and not human children.
Mara.
Goodbye.
Heather.
Hi.
Dave.
See ya.
And Jim.
Bye.
Now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.